With the election just weeks away, the vice presidential candidates debate the pandemic response, whether more could have been done.
Well, the American people have witnessed what is the greatest failure of any presidential administration in the history of our country.
And there was a defense of the White House response.
I want the American people to know that from the very first day, President Donald Trump has put the health of America first.
We'll bring you insights on the night's most important moments. Plus, your next trip could include a coronavirus test right at the airport. It's Thursday, October 8th. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. Before we jump into the VP debate, let's look at other big stories, including what was happening back at the White House yesterday. President Trump returned to the Oval Office as he recovers from COVID-19. The president's doctor said he had gone 24 hours without any coronavirus symptoms. He added that President Trump hadn't had a fever in 4 days and his oxygen saturation and respiratory rate were stable and in the normal range. It could be a few days before the broader prognosis is known. Hurricane Delta is currently a Category 2 storm expected to get stronger as it heads for the Gulf Coast. The current forecast has it hitting Louisiana tomorrow. New unemployment numbers are out later this morning, and they're expected to show more than 800,000 new jobless claims last week. Sarah Cheney from our economics team tells us why that number is stuck at such a high level.
There have been new layoffs in recent weeks. A lot of companies that at the beginning of the crisis were thinking, hey, we can hold on to workers, we think things will get better, are now seeing that their revenues are really not getting that much better, and so they're having to cut workers.
Citigroup has been fined $400 million by federal regulators for what they say are significant problems with risk management. Here's the Journal's David Benoit, who covers banking, on what regulators found.
What they said was Citi has had for years systemic problems with its risk management system. And this is a fine that essentially says, you haven't fixed this, you need to get your handle on this, and we're going to hold you accountable now for fixing these internal kind of controls. The risk management system is what underpins the safety of the bank, really. It's how the bank is supposed to look at every transaction and everything it does with customers in order to protect it from getting over its skis or messing up a client or something.
Citi said it's fully committed to addressing the issues identified. We've reported on how this reprimand, which was in the works for months, sped up planning for CEO Michael Corbat's retirement. In February, Jane Fraser takes over, the first woman to take charge of a major Wall Street bank. With the election just around the corner, Wall Street has to process debates, policy pledges, and polls. Our markets reporter, Caitlin Ostroff, breaks down the biggest questions facing traders.
So investors are really focused on political risks right now, including the stimulus. So there was debate as to whether we would see that before the election. Some people still think we might see some watered-down stimulus in the form of checks or other smaller aid packages, but most investors expect the big, robust spending to be after the election. Investors are also really focused on who winds up winning the election, and that investors really take comfort in a binary outcome. They like knowing with certainty what is likely to happen. And so recent polls have indicated that Biden has taken a lead. Some investors have started thinking that it's more likely that they get a Biden outcome from the election, and therefore that kind of makes planning what they would do with their investments a little bit easier. But a lot of them are kind of waiting on the sides because, as in 2016, we did get results that weren't expected.
Investors were also watching the vice presidential candidates meet in their one and only debate last night. We'll look at the key takeaways after the break. With the backdrop of a pandemic, a president who's battling the coronavirus, and a damaged economy, Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris debated last night in Salt Lake City.
He said because the president wanted people to remain calm.
Well, let's get
back. No, but Susan, this is important.
Susan, I
want to add,
but
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking.
I have to
I'm
weigh
speaking.
In.
There were moments like that, but compared to the last debate, there were fewer interruptions and a more measured tone overall. The plexiglass barrier separating the debaters served as a constant reminder of the stakes of the coronavirus pandemic. Pence defended the Trump administration's policies.
President Donald Trump did what no other American president had ever done, and that was he suspended all travel from China, the second largest economy in the world.
Harris repeatedly attacked the White House's performance on COVID-19.
We need to save our country, and Joe Biden is the best leader to do that. And frankly, this administration has forfeited their right to re-election based on this.
Let's bring in WSJ political reporter Emily Glazer. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
Emily, let's listen to some more of the exchange focusing on the pandemic, including Senator Harris on whether the administration was transparent enough.
They were informed that it's lethal in consequence, that it is airborne, that it will affect young people, and that it would be contracted because it is airborne. And they knew what was happening, and they didn't tell you.
Vice President Pence said a Biden administration couldn't have done better.
The reality is, when you look at the Biden plan, it reads an awful lot like what President Trump and I and our task force have been doing every step of the way. I mean, quite frankly, when I look at their plan that talks about advancing testing, creating new PPE, developing a vaccine, it looks a little bit like plagiarism, which is something Joe Biden knows a little bit about.
Emily, political junkies will recognize that as a reference to Biden having copied remarks from a British politician during the 1988 presidential campaign. That aside, the discussion about a COVID vaccine was interesting.
One thing that came to mind that was really interesting, besides the critiques on both sides of how the Trump administration has handled it, what the Biden-Harris administration would do differently, was that Harris said she would not take the vaccine if only President Trump endorsed it. And Pence, you know, accused her of undermining public confidence in a coronavirus vaccine and told her, quote, stop playing politics with people's lives. And she seemed to be shocked by that. I think they both explain their points that you would have expected them to say, you know, Harris critiquing the Trump administration and their handling of coronavirus, and frankly, speaking to Vice President Pence, who spearheaded and the coronavirus task force. So he certainly, you know, took that somewhat personally and had some statistics to talk about the work that they've done. I don't think a lot of new information was brought to the table, even though it was front and center.
We should point out the vice president acknowledged the president and the first lady's condition, appreciating the bipartisan support. Both of the vice presidential candidates are much younger than the two men running for president. That became a point of the debate.
The question was whether either Pence or Harris had discussed with either of the presidential running mates what would happen if they were, you know, unable to serve, and, you know, what would happen with them as the VPs. Would they take over? What would that look like? And both of them sidestepped that one. And frankly, I think that was a question a lot of people on both sides would have appreciated the answer to.
On another topic, both campaigns have discussed issues surrounding racial justice and law and order.
I think, and with regard to George Floyd, there's no excuse for what happened to George Floyd. And justice will be served. But there's also no excuse for the rioting and looting that followed.
Senator Harris brought up the first presidential debate when President Trump was asked to condemn white supremacist and militia groups.
We are talking about an election in 27 days, where last week the president of the United States took a debate stage in front of 70 million Americans and refused to condemn white supremacists.
Not true.
And
not true.
Emily, both campaigns are addressing these issues, but focusing on different aspects.
Vice President Pence, he really focused on law and order, which has been President Trump's talking point on this, and specifically talked about the violence that accompanied some of the protests and how that was something that, you know, they just don't stand for. Harris talked about her record as a prosecutor and that she was the only candidate with direct experience on issues that relate to criminal justice, and was offended in some ways by Pence and the way that he described her record. You know, she responded that she will not be lectured by the vice president about what it means to enforce the laws of our country.
Emily, some other issues, including the economy.
Indeed, it really got tense over specifically fracking. Vice President Pence repeatedly asserted that Joe Biden would ban fracking, and it's something that Joe Biden has denied. It got to the point where Kamala Harris looked straight at the camera and said Joe Biden would not ban fracking. This is important because fracking impacts some folks in swing states. I'm thinking specifically of Pennsylvania. We know that this election may come down to just a handful of swing states, and it could be, you know, voters in specific counties that could swing one way or the other. So yes, they're talking about the economy, but the reason why they're getting so specific and exchanging sharp words and both trying to prove their points on fracking is because they know that could impact a very specific and essential subset of voters.
The president's taxes also came up.
Indeed. You know, Kamala Harris tore right into this recent report in the New York Times that found President Trump paid $750 a year in federal income taxes in 2016 and 2017, and really went in on how the president owes money to the American people, and they have a right to know about that. And Pence just reiterated, you know, Trump's claim that this was not an accurate report, and also really took aim at Vice President Biden's pledge to reverse the 2017 tax bill that was signed into law by President Trump. They then went back and forth on their tax policies. You know, Harris has said that under Biden's plan, they would only raise taxes on those making more than $400,000 a year. Whereas, you know, Vice President Pence really dug into the fact that under the Trump administration, you know, American people have benefited from the tax cuts.
What about the Supreme Court?
One thing that definitely stood out was that Vice President Pence kept asking over and over again whether, if they were elected, they would try to pack the Supreme Court, essentially saying, you know, if they're going to add more justices. It's something that had come up during the primaries, and some Democratic candidates really were in favor of this. Biden had sidestepped the question during the presidential debate, the first one, and Harris also just wouldn't answer the question on packing a court. I think it was surprising to some people since we already saw Biden sidestep it. You'd think perhaps Harris would have had some kind of answer, but she just didn't want to play ball on that.
A late night, Emily Glazer. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, airlines and airports are anxious to get people flying again. To do it, they are rushing to offer pre-flight coronavirus testing. Hawaiian Airlines is offering at-home saliva tests ahead of flights. And airports from Oakland, California to Hartford, Connecticut are opening testing centers on site. Some are offering the more expensive PCR tests, which take 48 hours. Others, the cheaper, faster, but less accurate rapid tests for results in 15 minutes. Our Middle Seat columnist Scott McCartney says pre-flight testing right at the airport could help passengers avoid 14-day quarantines imposed by some states and foreign countries and make vacation destinations more feasible.
The accuracy of the testing is the big thing. You know, if you get the test 72 hours before you arrive, that doesn't mean you're not going to get infected in that 72-hour period at some point. So some locations, Bermuda, for example, has a very rigorous testing program. You get tested before, you get tested when you arrive, you get tested 4 days later. If you stay 2 weeks in Bermuda, you're going to be subject to a total of 5 different tests.
And that's what's news for Thursday. We have ongoing coverage of these and other stories on WSJ.com and our app. And we'll have an updated podcast later today. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.